Coming up next hour, and for the third and fourth hours of the program, Laura Hirsch will be here to talk about her book, Foundation of Discovery, The Cause of Autism Channeled, and some amazing stuff that she uncovered. For right now, we're talking with William Stillman, whose latest book, The Autism Prophecies, has an absolutely fascinating questionnaire that he sent out to autistics all over the world, asking such questions as, what are your earliest memories of being in the world? Have you always had an understanding of your place? Have you sensed a divine presence? And if so, has that divine presence guided or informed you? Asking for insights into human civilization. And some of these answers will absolutely floor you. We'll get into that when we come back. Don't go away. This is Coast to Coast AM. William Stillman, right before the break, you were telling me about a message you had received from one of the autistics you work with. What was he saying?
A message I received from
Wally,
is my
that,
friend
yeah.
Wally, yes.
Yes.
He was just explaining the mechanics of tapping into other people's thoughts. And, you know, it's all emotionally driven. As I said, inherently gentle and exquisitely sensitive are we, those of us on the autism spectrum. And he was explaining a little bit about tapping other people's thoughts and emotions and how he loves having people read to him. And how he is not only visualizing what they're reading, but he's also tapping into thoughts and emotions that they have as they're reciting to him from written works. And, you know, I think, George, autism continues to increase. It's not exclusive to the United States. It's worldwide. And I think the more that we go, the more we're going to understand and appreciate in coming decades that these capacities are natural, not supernatural, and we all have the potential to tap them.
I know you don't want to get into causes or things like that, but what do you make of the numbers? Is it just a matter of better diagnoses, and that's why the numbers have jumped so dramatically in the last, say, 20 years, or is there something else at work here?
Well, I get asked that question a lot, and as I mentioned just a little while ago, when I began in this field, I worked with people who had one label, but in hindsight were clearly autistic and were misdiagnosed. So I think that we've certainly become much more thorough in identifying the symptoms and traits of clinical autism. But I also do truly believe that we are seeing a rather dramatic increase. And again, it's happening internationally. Here in this country, when I began working in this field, the statistics around the incidence of autism were 1 in 10,000. They're now 1 in 110. And those are statistics comparable to other countries where they are collecting data and crunching the statistics. And in fact, in some countries, the statistics are a bit narrower. So the next few decades are going to get really interesting. I predict in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see it jump to 1 in 10 children. And remember, 4 to 5 times more likely in males than in females. So I think what's also going to happen is we're going to see a softening of aggression in the male gender over the next 50 years or so. And I think that we've got to gear up and we've got to develop that cultural competency and that sensitivity to understanding my people, because people who are average or typical are going to be in the minority before long.
You know, we'll get into your survey and questionnaire in a second, but I have to tell you, you know, the answers, obviously, they demonstrate exactly what you've been saying through this interview, the acute sensitivity and intelligence, and more than that, insight. I mean, insight into the human condition, which makes it all the more profoundly sad when you think about autistics who've been diagnosed as mentally retarded, shot up with drugs, stuck in an institution, belittled, made fun of. The lives of hell that they've led, when on the inside, they're intelligent and can't tell us about it.
Thank you, George. I grew up for many years of my life verbally abused, physically harassed. My speech and body language was publicly mocked and mimicked in front of cafeteria staff and bus drivers and teachers who did nothing. And that manifested in post-traumatic stress disorder. It manifested in a depression so severe, I almost slashed my wrists as a teenager. And there was a period of time when I became very cynical, very embittered. And you would think, wouldn't you, that people who have endured similar circumstances or worse would want to or fantasize about exacting revenge or project a prediction for a day of reckoning when everyone who had ever done them wrong would have to atone. And there was none of that, absolutely none of that in the responses that I got from people with autism, ranging in age from 7 to their mid-60s. Everyone responded with such eloquence and grace and humility. And that was something that I just thought was so blessed and so profound about the responses to the survey that I generated.
Well, we'll start with the question one, which would seem to be, it might seem innocuous until you read the answers. You asked, what are your earliest memories of being in the world? And, you know, you might think of, you know, third grade or second grade or going to kindergarten or something like that. The answers you got were far from that. And I'm going to mention one here as a way to get into another part of the discussion. It's from Jordan, age 16. And he said, my earliest memories are of time spent with my spirit friends. And then he names them Gutan, Stosh, Tim, Mandy, and a man named Goofball.
Right.
Spirit friends? That pops up?
Yeah. One of the things about the survey that I found most intriguing was none of these people knew one another, and yet the responses were remarkably consistent. And that pertains to that question, what are your earliest memories of being in the world? A lot of people remembered being born.
Yeah.
But more than a few people remembered their lives prior to being in the physical and being in a heavenly realm and being a soul and interacting with God and interacting with other presences. And I think that's to what Jordan is referring.
What do you make of the earlier presences? Because in your second book, you have sort of a positive view of them, angels, angelic sort of presences that were had a beneficial effect in communication with the autistics. And then in this book, you get into something much darker.
I do, and we can talk about that in a moment. Let me address the first piece of what you were asking. And again, this pertains to myths and stereotypes and misinterpretations. And one of the stereotypes of people with autism, when we don't presume intelligence, is that they're, quote, in their own little world, and the stereotype is the person will sit in a corner and rock and babble and laugh and carry on. Well, I've got a different take on that based upon the information that I'm gathering and what I've observed. And what I'm seeing is what appears to be a two-way interaction. And I'll be really curious to see if any parents call in and validate this. Same time of day, usually every day, same spot from which the person emerges joyful and jubilant and full of good humor. And from the people who can speak with autism, they're talking about angels and they're talking about interacting with angels. And let's acknowledge, as you just did, and I did too, we're talking about folks who signed up for a really difficult life. And I don't believe that persons who appear to be severely impaired are thrust into this world to fend for themselves without some sort of guidance and mentorship from something divine. And that may be a little bit far out there for some people to appreciate, but this is what I'm seeing consistently for many, not all, many people with autism, is that respite that seems to occur on a regular basis where they are being given guidance and feeling rejuvenated.
You use the phrase signed up for it. And, you know, three quarters of the world, half the world believes in reincarnation, karma. And they might suggest that that's exactly what happens, that that people like the autistics would choose this particular path. Do you go that far?
I would say that is so for a number of people that have told me that. And I think some of that's in the autism prophecies. One little fella talks about trying to decide prior to being born whether he was going to go with his mom here in the States or be born to a Japanese couple. And he decided his mom here because Japanese was too hard to learn.
Back to the darker side that you make reference to, in addition to some of the kids, some of the autistics having these experiences and things that come from the sky, there are on occasion some sort of dark side. And as you mentioned in this book, I mean, what better victim could there be? The, you know, autistic wake up screaming, yelling, their parents are think they just want attention in the middle of the night, whereas you raise the possibility they're being tormented.
Again, we're back to myths and stereotypes.
Sure.
And misinterpretations.
Understood. Yeah.
And, you know, when you are inherently gentle and exquisitely sensitive and you're vibrating at a frequency different than the average person and you're open to things seen and unseen, there's good stuff that comes with that or can come with that. And then I think you're also wide open to perceiving the bad stuff. And I do believe that there are presences in this universe that are very ill-intended, that will seize upon opportunities to take hold and create a vicious cycle and feed from that negativity to keep someone down. And what more perfect victim than the person who is already stigmatized, than the person who, for whom people do not presume intelligence, for the person who everyone interprets everything they do as stereotypical or extreme behaviors that really do have meaning. And what I am seeing, George, is a dramatic spike in many young people with autism being absolutely terrorized. And the kids and young people who can speak are telling me what they're seeing, and it's been consistent. They're waking up between midnight and 3 a.m., screaming in terror, horrible nightmares, and they're describing shadowy figures, hooded figures, and red eyes is also consistent. And the longer that goes ignored, or the longer that gets chalked up to the myths and stereotypes of which I've been talking about, the more it takes hold in the family's home. There's also oftentimes a lot of negativity and stress in the home, sometimes abuse and addiction. Those negative forces love that stuff. They feed from it. They thrive from it. And if they thrived off of anything higher in terms of emotion, they wouldn't be here. And so what ends up happening is spillover into real time. So I'm in a lot of homes where that sort of thing is happening, and there are manipulations of electricity going on, appliances malfunctioning, televisions turning on and off. And I meet a lot of very anxious and nervous dogs who park themselves directly in front of me, sometimes will put a paw on my lap, look right at me, and they will not budge because they want to tell me something. And once I come out with the truth, then they relax.
How much of the manipulation of turning the lights on and off in the TV could be the autistics themselves doing that?
Well, you know, that's a possibility, and I have heard of that sort of thing happening, sort of that energy that's not yet been tamed and refined. But, George, when you plug that symptom, and I'm going to call it a symptom, into my litmus test for discerning whether there's something ill-intended going on, you don't want to look at that in isolation. You want to look at it as part of a set of criteria of other things going on. And that's when it tends to fit and make sense.
A lot of spiritual stuff in what you uncover and what you learn along the way, including another of your litmus tests where you get a parent who writes to you and they think that their autistic child is the reincarnation of Jesus Christ or something like that. That's sort of a giveaway for you, isn't it?
You know, what I'm putting out there, and this is why I was so adamant and very careful in setting a tone when we began, because what I'm putting out there is radically unconventional when we're talking about autism, when we're talking about issues with developmental delays and so on. And there are some people who have responded to what I've written who have a different perspective or a different reality than what I have. And I'm really about trying to keep it real, George, and I don't want to glorify anybody unreasonably, and I really have a responsibility to my friends with autism not to even go there, because they're going to come down on me real hard in saying, look, we just want to be accepted, we just want to be like everyone else, and so on. But, you know, there are some folks who have gone to another extreme and sort of polarized autism in the opposite of the stigma by suggesting that we're talking about God's special little angels. And personally, in my opinion, I don't think that's real life either. I think we need to look for a fair and and balanced compromise here.
Back to your questionnaire, your survey, the second question, have you always had an understanding of your place in the world? And these answers, again, are amazing in their sensitivity. Bill, age 63, yes, I've always felt it's my place to help other people and to share love. Nothing has been more important. Len, age 31, I have faith that all people have a divine purpose that is equal in dignity. Maria, age 45, knew I had to be here, but did not know why, and frankly didn't like it at all. I was not aware of my presence, says Michael, but God's. To trust him is to know him as I should be. And, you know, it's hard to, again, going back to the idea, the stigma that has been attached to some of these folks, that they're retarded, that they don't have a clear thought in their head. And then you see thoughts like that come spilling out, and it's very moving.
Isn't that something? And I've got to tell you, George, in my darkest hour, when I was contemplating a straight razor and really thinking about this is not worth going through, that is what saved me. That something inside me that said, no, this is not the time or place for that, and this will turn around, and someday people will know who you are for what it is that you have to offer. And I had to hang on to that faith. I had to hang on to that, even during those years when I was being really abused and harassed. So, wow, when I got those responses back, and have you had a sense of your place in the world, it was something I could relate to also.
Do you have insights into human civilization? If so, in what ways? And Bill says, I believe civilization is evolving toward the truth very slowly, as to be unobserved by the mind, but available to the spirit. Fred says, humans are forever God's children. He gave us life and a planet to be on. Humans were to be his reason to keep this space ball around. But man disgraces his creation, so he's sending tender souls like me to give people reasons to change their ways.
Yeah, and Fred is a really, really young guy. Fred is maybe 11 or 12, and he doesn't talk, but he types instead. Now, to see Fred, you might buy into that culture of fear about myths and stereotypes, but, you know, he's clearly a gorgeous human being with lots of important things to say, and he has a deceiving exterior.
Richie, age 13, says, yes, I see when people will pass away. Is that meaning literally he knows when people are going to die?
I think so. I think that's what he intends, yes.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen examples of that where an autistic will sort of like give you a hint or give their family a hint to somebody who's about to depart?
Remember, we're inherently gentle and exquisitely
yes.
sensitive as a rule, and I have certainly had anecdotes of people who have been very, very upset, and if they don't speak, people are wondering what's going on. Is this a, quote, behavior? And, you know, an hour later, they get a phone call that a family member just died.
You know, there are, we've heard a lot about autism in the news in the last year or two about some very high-profile parents who feel that they know what the cause is, and they've done their best to, in essence, cure it or to recapture their kids. I don't know, we're going to a break in about a minute, but I wonder if you can address that just to begin with right here. Do you put much faith in that, A, that there is such a thing as a cure?
I guess
if it's not a disease, it can't be a cure.
You got it, right. George. If it's not a disease, you can't cure it. But
right.
I also get where those parents are coming from, and I don't want to discourage them, but I also hope that there's a place for compromise, that they're not constantly running those kids to doctors and therapists and putting them on all kinds of medication, and that there's a balance there of some sort. And it'll be really curious to revisit with those parents the word autism when those really young kids are in their 20s, 30s, and older.
William Stillman, I'm greatly enjoying our conversation here. You're the author of The Autism Prophecies. That's your latest book anyway. When we come back, if it's okay with you, we'll open up the phone lines and see what our listeners have on their minds. Stay with us for more. Great. Stay with us. More Coast to Coast AM is just around the corner. Thanks for being with us tonight. At 11, coming up at the top of this hour, Laura Hirsch will be here. She's the author of a book called The Cause of Autism Channeled. Pretty fascinating look at this topic of the evening. And in the meantime, though, we've got plenty of time for your calls for our guest, William Stillman, author of The Autism Prophecies, and it's an absolutely stunning book. At least I was stunned in reading it this afternoon. Stay with us. We'll be going to the phones right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to the phones with your questions for my guest, William Stillman, author of The Autism Prophecies and other books. East of the Rockies, James in Minnesota. Hi, James.
Hello, gentlemen. Coincidentally, I was just down at my aunt's house, and she has a son who's autistic, and I was hanging out with him for a little bit, and she was kind of asking me if I was ever interested in dealing with people who have special cares, because I seem to have a kind of a knack for it. I've been to the Special Olympics one time out on the West Coast around Federal Way, Seattle, and I helped a guy there swim. And I was wondering where if some information or somewhere to go or some guidance, if anybody was interested in helping people like that, you know what I mean? And because I got a cousin myself with my own blood who has a CMV, and it's a tragic story. But if you could help me with that question on where to go if you want to help, that'd be fantastic. And I love this topic. It's almost like a coincidental miracle, really.
Thanks, James. William?
Hi, James. Thank you for your good and great question. And, James, I must ask you, if you don't mind me asking, a very personal question.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Did you have dyslexia or a learning difference of some sort yourself?
I have a lot of knacks and different things.
Thank you. Okay,
that's what I was. Twitchy eyes and one eye.
I was picking that up in your voice. And I think that you are the perfect person to be poised for helping other people to understand some of the salient themes of intellect and compassion and sensitivity that I've been talking about this evening. And so, James, what I would advise you to do is to check in your local area for agencies who provide services to children, teens, and adults on the autism spectrum, or anybody with a different or unique way of being. And, do some research, look them up on the internet, apply, and see how far that gets you. But I can tell from listening to you that you would have a natural proclivity for interacting with and supporting those folks in ways that maybe other people wouldn't have naturally.
Hey, if that's all we accomplished tonight, William, that's a pretty good thing if James signs up and helps out some people. Thanks, James, for the call. West of the Rockies, Nan in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Nan.
Hello. I am so thrilled. I'm a little nervous, which is hard to do to me these days, but this topic is so important. I will just quickly share a couple of comments. I myself am not autistic. I have another spectrum disorder. I'm off the charts, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. And William, when you talked about autistic symptoms, what you called blips, disconnects, and misfires,
yes.
are what I have been calling for years my processing glitches.
Absolutely.
And they are the same.
Absolutely.
They are absolutely the same, the fidgeting, the getting things stuck in your head,
mm-hmm.
switching gears and forgetting why, losing
Thank
track
you.
Of time because you're in your own little world. I've had these issues and many, many more throughout my life and suffered greatly. Been held back a lot because of them, and I've, since my diagnosis at age 42, have been on something of a personal mission to, at every opportunity, share information with people about attention deficit because they don't understand. I totally agree with you about the need for cultural competency. I think it's actually imperative. I recently read two books by Temple Grandin, who is wonderful. I recommend her books highly. Highly to anybody who wants to know more about autism. They're very, very accessible, very straightforward, full of good information. And she uses a term I love about people who are not autistic or attention deficit, bipolar is another spectrum disorder. She calls, and these people, of course, are the majority of the population, and she refers to them as neurotypicals. Which somehow I just sort of got a little chuckle out of. But, the reality is that we are a very, very small percentage of the population, the adult population of any country in the world. We're everywhere. And I share the belief that we are here for a reason and that what are perceived as deficits by other people come with some really amazing gifts as well. And what you refer to as exquisite sensitivity is, I believe, one of them.
Thank you, Nan. And here's my challenge to you, to take what you know to be true about yourself and understanding and appreciating how that has been misunderstood and misinterpreted and employ it and use it to be of service to others.
I would love to find a way to do that.
You're doing it now.
I have a physical disability that's taking too much of my time and energy these days, but this is always in my mind. And
you just took the first step this evening by self-disclosing publicly in the way that you did. So congratulations. Keep going.
Thanks, Nan. Appreciate it. First-time caller Chris in Florida. Hi, Chris.
Hello, George and Mr. Stillman. It's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Aren't you sweet?
Well, tonight's show really touched me, Mr. Stillman, because some of the words you used in describing autistic people are the exact same words I've been using all my life. See, my older brother has Down syndrome,
Yeah. And
the similarities are uncanny. I mean, I tell people I basically grew up with an angel. He's so innocent, he finds bliss in everything, but he does have a gift as well. If you turn on a radio, any country song, it doesn't matter how old it is, how new it is, he can tell you the artist that sings it in the name of the song. It doesn't matter what country song it is. He knows it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask, do you hear this a lot about people describing Down syndrome? What basically is the difference between an autistic person and Down syndrome as far as characteristics go?
Chris, I don't know how old your brother is, but it is not unusual, and you might want to take a look at the symptoms of autism, but it is not unusual for autism and Down syndrome to go hand in hand, to be what's called comorbid or co-occurring. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you be a far less richer human being for not having your brother in your life?
I think Chris is gone. Let me follow that up, William, a little bit. Him describing his brother's knowledge of all these songs, no matter how old. Do autistics, folks even with Down syndrome, are they able to tap into something there to know songs that they could never have heard before?
Well, I think that we all have gifts and talents. I just think that when someone appears to be severely incapacitated or has a deceiving exterior, then we jump on the bandwagon of calling it a savant skill.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to our wildcard line, Andrew in Indianapolis. Hi, Andrew. Good morning.
Hello, George. Hello. I was just wondering what your guests thought about chelation therapy, something that Jenny McCarthy has talked about.
Mm-hmm. Chelation is the process whereby toxins and metals in the body are relieved from the body. And as George and I were talking before the break with regards to cures and remedies and so on, I really don't have much of an opinion about it. I think that parents need to be making very thoroughly informed and educated choices about paths that they wish to pursue. Autism is a multi-billion-dollar industry because it can be. Because so little is known about autism. And so we've got people coming at it from a million different directions, and I'll include myself in that as well. And I just would wish for people to make very informed choices and decisions.
That's a good diplomatic way to put it there, William. Andrew in Los Angeles on our other wildcard line. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
My name's Andrew. I've got Asperger's. I remember very vividly previous lifetimes and the previous existence in heaven, and I wonder how common that is with other people, that they remember angelic realms, that kind of thing.
Well, Andrew, I think you might be comforted and surprised to learn that in my experience and in my opinion, I have met a number of folks and have heard from a number of folks who share your experience, so know that you're not alone. And I think that it's a real blessing that you're able to recall that information, and hopefully it's something that provides you with faith and comfort and buoys you while you're here.
How much resistance, William, do you run into from families, from loved ones who say, I just can't swallow it. I can't believe that he remembers or she remembers being in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, George, as I was talking about earlier, my dissenters are they're really few. My greatest challenge is getting people to see their loved one as intelligent and as someone to develop a meaningful relationship with. That's my challenge.
Okay. Wildcard line, Mac in New Orleans. Hi, Mac. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Okay.
My question is, I have 2 3-year-old nephews, they're twins, and one of them just got diagnosed with autism. And my curiosity is, how will this affect the other child as time goes on? We're already seeing instances somewhat where he's jealous of the attention that the autism child is getting going through the process of being diagnosed with the nurse and stuff like that. And how do you think this will affect him as time goes on?
George, is it?
It's Mac.
Mac,
I
mean,
it's
forgive
Mac.
Me. Forgive me, Mac. You know, I think it needs to start with a tone that the parents in that family set. And in what ways are they able to engage the brothers with one another? In what ways are they able to provide opportunities for them to play together and to be interacting together? You know, it really comes down to the tone that the family sets. In what ways is the twin that's not affected by autism able to contribute or participate in some of the activities or some of the appointments and meetings that the parents need to go to? Really think, you know, it's an opportunity that folks can either take in one direction and lament about, or they can go in another direction and try to be proactive about.
What Mac's question also raises a bunch of other questions. When you have cases where twins are involved, one has it, why doesn't the other one have it? And how do they develop together? Is there a special communication between them together? That would be a fascinating case study, I would think.
That would be something that would be intriguing to pursue. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a lot of cases where the twins, are there any cases where both twins have it, and or where is it more common that just one does?
I know families of 4, 5, 6 children where everyone has autism, believe it or not. So that makes an argument for a genetic link or a genetic predisposition.
My gosh, I can imagine the expense alone would be such a challenge for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think it depends on the tone that's set. And I'm about looking for low and no cost ways to develop relationships and provide opportunities for folks rather than all kinds of therapies and medications and so on.
East of the Rockies, Tom in Chicago. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
Okay.
I don't know if I'll give you enough information, but your guest should check this out if he is able to do it somehow. I have searched out religious spiritual experiences in churches all my life to learn about the different ones. And I went to one in the Wisconsin Dells, which is north of Madison, in Wisconsin. And there was a community center. And I went there because I heard about these folks, and there was 50 to 100 people there. They did have a guru, too. They literally would put themselves into an autistic state deliberately, and they would go back out and work in the regular neighborhood. I saw them in both states. And when I walked in the room, these 50 to 100 people were in this euphoric state like a trance, and they would you could see telepathy going on all over. They wouldn't talk. They would burst out in laughter and giggles and stuff constantly, like they were high on life and high on each other. And the guru would come out, and he'd be in the same trance, but he would maybe say something to folks like me visiting, like maybe insights or whatever he's reading, you know. But it was so amazing. I thought of the world moving that way eventually, where we'd be in sort of it all worldwide autistic state of euphoric kind of telepathic state.
Well, Tom, that's an interesting perspective, and I'm wondering if you observed how those folks got into the place that they were at, because I'd be willing to bet it was through a rhythmic or repetitive movement or chant or vocalization.
Yeah, some of that was going on.
Thank you. All right. And that's exactly the way of many people with autism, except in autism we call it stimming or self-stimulation. And how come for someone with autism it's stimming, but for folks who are using it for spiritual or religious purposes, we call it mantra?
Hmm.
Interesting to ponder.
Tell me this, William. Other countries, I don't want you to overgeneralize, but other countries where autism is prevalent, are there different approaches, more sympathetic approaches, more harsh approaches that are of note, should serve as an example to us?
What I can tell you, George, is from the people that I have heard from in other countries, they're wishing that what it is I'm writing about were more readily accessible to them. And as I mentioned earlier, I've written a number of other parenting books other than the spiritual books, and so people are accessing those, and they're following up with me to say thank you for the positive tone that you're setting. So I can only imagine some of the limitations and challenges that those folks are encountering, and some of the guilt and shame that they must be feeling as well.
What about organized religion? How have religions reacted to you and your work? Are they generally sympathetic, or they're glad to get the help, or are they hostile?
I think that there are some people that are not yet in a place where they're open to accepting what it is that I'm putting out there. And then there are other people who are welcoming of it, who have allowed me to come in and make presentations in their churches, and who are desiring to be more inclusive in their congregation by being welcoming of people with autism. And that can be a challenge for those environments.
I want to go back to your survey. We got about 2 minutes left. And the question 10, what would you wish for the average reader to understand about what you've shared? This is asked by you of autistics around the world. Mm-hmm. Angie Carlotta says, open your mind. We have a purpose here. We all have a purpose. Even those who you do not think are offering us something, often they're smarter than you. And then your guy, Bill, he says, the answer is that life is an illusion, that we're so much more than we perceive. We are not beings, as in a thing, but being itself. We're love itself. That's some pretty profound stuff coming out of these folks.
It is indeed. And if only we could take our blinders off and dispense with the myths and stereotypes and be open to new ways of thinking, I think that there are some unlimited possibilities that can occur when we renew the respect in our relationships with all persons who have deceiving exteriors and unique ways of being in the world.
I know that here in Nevada, a friend of mine, his name is Ralph Todre, very involved in autism research, and he helped convince the state of Nevada to require insurance companies to make sure they cover some basic kinds of therapies and treatments for autistics. Is that the case around the country? Is there a trend in that direction?
Each state is going to handle it a bit differently, and some folks are more advanced in addressing the needs of families and people with autism than others. So it's not universal, but I think that we need to get to that place where we're developing that cultural competency, enhancing our respect, presuming intellect, and demonstrating a sensitivity.
All right, the latest book, Autism, The Autism Prophecies, it's excellent. It's an excellent read. What's next for you?
Well, I think I've done about 10 books in 8 years, so I think I've about exhausted everything that I have to say.
Well, you never know what's going to come up.
About autism, right?
William Stillman, I really enjoyed the conversation. Glad to have you here. I'll have you back anytime. Thanks very much. And coming up, Laura Hirsch will be here to talk about her book, The Cause of Autism Channeled. Don't go away. You're on Coast to Coast AM.